Yeah, here we go. All right. Fire it off, Joel.
Three, two, one.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show! All right,
that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I am man, hear me roar. And numbers too big to ignore. And I'm way too hungry to settle for chick food. Cause my stomach's starting to growl. And I'm going on the prowl for a big old double whopper, man, that's good. Oh yes, I'm a guy. I'll admit I've been fed quiche. Wake tofu, bye-bye. Now it's for whopper beef I reach. I will eat this meat till my innie turns into an outie. I am starved. I am incorrigible. I am man. Bean sprouts are emasculating. Might say that they're castrating. Simple men who just like to eat a real meal. Why can't you get it through your brain? The top of the food chain. We gotta sink our teeth into something our bellies can fill. Oh yes, I'm a guy. I'll admit I've been fed quiche. Wave tofu, bye-bye. Now it's for Whopper beef I reach. I will eat this meat till my innie turns into an outie. I am starved. I am incorrigible. Got a hunger and I can't fight it. I'm tired of fancy pants people telling me what to eat. I'm not caving to society's pressure. In case you missed it, here's a refresher. I want meat, 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 meat. Oh yes, I'm a guy. I'll admit I've been fed quiche. The way so food, bye-bye. Now it's for Whopper.
Giant Burger King commercial.
When you were making it for young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll make it bad. For the show name, go direct to DLNTS.org. And IRC channels and LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 808 of the Linux Link Tech Show tonight with the extra long intro for your ribbed for your pleasure, right,
Joel? Oh, yeah.
On the show tonight, we have Alan.
Hello, everybody. Gotta remember to, I have to turn mic on
we
now.
We have. Yeah, we have Joel, ribbed for your pleasure.
I know what that's referring to now.
We have
from
Flying Rich.
Compound Southern Command and ripped for your pleasure.
Yes, ripped.
He's doing the ding
push-ups. Sit-ups and push-ups. There you go. And
hello,
Joe.
Ribbed for
excellent.
My pleasure.
yeah, ribbed for his own pleasure. Rich,
yes,
I had a question for you last week, and
then
you disappeared.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
That's okay. We were talking about single board computers and the different companies and stuff like that. And the one, so here's my question. I did absolutely no research on this between last week and this week. And then it just hit me today that I wanted to get your opinion on this, your question. And my thought was, what surprises me about the single board computer industry is that with like the Raspberry Pis and the X-Droids and all these things, is there seems to be this market there that I don't see existing anywhere else. And what I mean by that is, like, the Raspberry Pi, the Odroid and stuff like that seem to be very, very niche markets, unlike any other device, like a cell phone or a laptop or any other, like, electronic device. It has a wider, broader appeal. But with these Pis and the Odroids and everything, I don't see this, like, I see, unlike all these other devices, like, more of it's like a very niche market, education and tinkering. So I'm kind of like, where are all these devices that should just be Raspberry Pis with some OS that's running whatever it is this device is?
Okay, so let me break the question down into two parts. So when you think about it, the Heathkit guys, I'm sure there's guys that make tube amps for their ham radios, and I'm sure there's guys that will etch their own circuit boards and build something. So I think it's kind of like the class of those type of people. Like, how many guys are, you know, rebuilding a 1970 Camaro? So I've been watching like a lot of YouTube on people tinkering with cars, and I tinkered with cars as a necessity because, and I'm sure my family would have found a way to pay for it, but I fixed all the cars in my family. You know, whether it was an engine, a transmission, swapping it out, whatever it may be, I did it. So I think the same thing about Raspberry Pis. And when you think about the Raspberry Pi, isn't earth-shattering or great or anything, and a lot of people are going to send me hate mail on that. It is and it isn't. I think what's great about it is, you know, there's a long lineage of, you know, hacking type devices. Back in the time of news groups, there were people taking like PROMs, flashing them and putting a timing crystal and making that into a pseudo type processor.
Mm-hmm. I think you're probably thinking of more of the microcontrollers, like stamp controllers, right?
Like, so, well, the PIC microcontrollers, the basic stamps later on. Then you have Arduinos, which, you know, I think is Arduinos a slightly geekier hacking, because you have to, it's not like just throwing something on an SD card, micro SD card, and shoving it in. So
you got to wire it up and
which,
do stuff.
Which that's part of the thing. Like I've got an ESP32 cam here, which I'll talk about a little bit later, and just figuring out how to wire it up, like each different device. It's like, all right, what's the pinouts? Okay, you know, I got to short this while I'm programming and push the reset button. So, I think the second part of what you're asking is, so the first part is ham guys, Heathkit guys, those types of tinkerers are playing with Raspberry Pis. That's where the market is. The second part of the question is, I think what you're saying is in relation to like the 1985, early 90s PC computer that wasn't connected to the internet, that you dialed up to the BBS with or used FidoNet. What are you asking? What's the killer app? What's the killer product?
I guess what I'm saying is you're kind of like running right alongside of what I'm saying is that, you know, that what you had described about that first part is what I'm saying. You know, I look at like the Raspberry Pi, the Odroid, the single board computers, there is so much that you can do with them. And I said this last week, I was like, I'm not like looking a gift horse in the mouth, But what I'm saying is, aside from that tinkerer, you know, hobbyist, educational market, what else is going on with these devices that for me, when I look at it, I'm like, there just seems to be a lot of companies really trying to get into this market and bring these very powerful devices to the market, but I don't see anything happening with them. Like, I don't see a market, like any like consumer-based devices out there that are essentially a repackaged Raspberry Pi programmed to do something. That's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, so what, like, these companies obviously are seeing more than the obvious tinkerer market.
So not that the exception proves the rule.
But where is it?
There, when I was at VMworld in Vegas, there's a company, was it Citrix? I always get it confused. I forget if they're using a Raspberry Pi as a Citrix client. So it actually was a Raspberry Pi. They'll sell you a Raspberry Pi. PFSense does an ARM box. It's not a Raspberry Pi. It's something else, but it's an ARM box. And so you could be running a PFSense firewall for, I don't know if it was like $85, $100, what. But they do have an ARM product out there, but it is not a Raspberry Pi. I think the second part of that is let me finish trashing Raspberry Pi altogether, and so this is going to be the compliment part. So what Raspberry Pi was very successful at, kind of like how Apple didn't invent the MP3 player. The MP3 player was around for 5 years before Apple made an iPod. What Apple did with the MP3 player is they made it so any idiot could do it. Any idiot could transfer their files over. Now, you and I mean, my favorite MP3 player is the one I plug into a USB port. It mounts itself as a drive, as an SMB mount, and I drag the files over I want. And that's my favorite way. I don't understand how an iPod works. It doesn't make sense to me. But the general population, the other 99.95% of the world, fully understands how an iPod works. Mm. And I think that was the great thing about the Raspberry Pi. It wasn't that it's the best, the thisest, the thattest. But you know what? They combined a couple of things. An SD card on the original one, now a micro SD card, an HDMI output, USB ports, and the rest of the stuff pretty much has been around forever. So one, packaging, two, marketing, and I guess three, price point was the big breakthrough for the Raspberry Pi. Now, the other part, you know, going further on, I'm not sure that there's supposed to be a product with a Raspberry Pi. And I say that because I really want to write a list.
It was supposed to be educational. What's kind of funny now, though, is you got a few people that are actually selling them in products. I just put a link in the IRC. But go ahead, Rich. Keep going.
But that's what I'm saying. It was originally coming out for the educational market, but now you got a bunch of other devices that are, you know, there's just not a week that goes by that you don't hear about some kind of single board computer that's coming out. And I'm like, aside from the education and tinkerer market, where else are these places?
One of my coworkers.
It seems like there's a lot of interest and a lot of companies that want to get into this and a lot of boards that get put out there, but I there's got to be more than just like, because let's be honest, if it's not a Raspberry Pi, and I'll even throw the Odroid in this, how to use these goddamn things, it's insane what you have to do unless you take exactly what you get and don't do anything else with it. I mean, because the documentation and the barrier to entry is very high. Again, I'm like, you know, I'm surprised that if the market is only tinkerers and hobbyists and education, like, it just seems like so many companies are trying to get in there, but I don't see the resulting products yet.
Let me hit on VMware. Apparently, VMware has released ESXi kind of in a beta way to their TAM and to the consultants. And I'm trying to get a copy of it. I haven't been able to get a copy yet. So that's out there. But realistically, I want ESXi on, you know, my ROC Pro 64 with 4 gigs of RAM, so I can just spin up an instance of fill in the blank. As opposed to burning it on a micro SD card and plugging it, which isn't a bad thing, but when I'm 150 miles away from home, it makes it a little bit difficult to do that. Let's see, I think we talked about it last week that Firefox, Mozilla, came out with a home, kind of like home automation assistant, but it all runs on a Raspberry Pi, it stays on your network. They call it a gateway, but really it's a gateway to your device, it's not a gateway off your network. The something like Diet Pi makes it stupid simple easy to do things, and where you can even make a deployment script. You can say use OpenSSH, use this Wi-Fi SSID and password, install this number of apps, and for all of the apps use this username and password. Now somebody at work, what I just got there, we had a conversation. He got a Pi and installed Pi-hole on it. And then a week later, he tells me he got an Odroid HC2, I think it was, and set it up as a time capsule with Open Media Vault. So there's, you know, without any, like, how do I do it or whatever, not that this guy can't do these things on his own with a little bit of reading, but he didn't solicit any advice from me, and he just did it. And he's like, oh, yeah, I set that up. I was like, dang cool, you know, wow. Which, you know, my go-to distro is Diet Pi, but I think Open Media Vault, if you're setting up a time capsule for a Mac, is probably the easiest way to go. Typically, if I test a new board, or if, like, I have a Plex server on an Odroid XU4 here, and I have one on an Odroid HC1 in Orlando, but it's running Plex, Sonar, Radar, Transmission. Here, it's also running as a time capsule, and there's a little bit of, you're right, there's a little bit of fiddly and hackery. Now, the unfortunate thing is, once you have Plex and Sonar, Radar, Transmission all installed, then you have to go into each individual software and do a configure on it. So it talks to, you know, so the Sonar talks to Transmission that talks to the Plex and down the line like that, which there's got to be a text file somewhere I can just clone, because I can make my life a little bit easier when I do it. Because I did have to nuke and pave my HC1 in Orlando. I had a hard drive issue. But are there commercial products? Are they, I think if you look, you see them, you know, whether it's going to be at a kiosk or whether it's going to be, you know, some home automation hub type thing. Realistically, I don't know if it has to do with honesty or deception. Are you deceptive if you hide that you're using, you know, Raspberry Pi 3 or a Raspberry Pi 0 in a device, or a Raspberry Pi module? Like, some people are even putting them in their cars. You remember back, I guess it was later 80s, people were putting PCs in the car instead of CD changers?
Probably more like the 90s. I'm thinking about when mp3car.com came out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot out there. There's a lot. In fact, Mark Spencer, who I don't know if you guys know, I think about a year ago, he sold Digium. And so Mark Spencer is now a jet-setting playboy. And I don't know what he's been up to. I haven't really talked to him. But his original software that he was doing for like an open source ethos, and his plan on the project kind of changed, was running on a Raspberry Pi. And his concept was that your ethos system, which traditionally was a display with some computer and sensors in it, his concept was to have it disparate objects so that you would have display, kind of like a 1980s PC. You have a display, you have sensors, you have, you know, the CPU horsepower. Any one of them is not proprietary, and you can replace them or grow the system in the future. And the latest revision, or at least last I know of, he was using two Toradex single board computers, which are, yeah, sure, go.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to get at is, you just again rattled off a bunch of stuff you can do, and certain people have done. But what I don't like, I don't see a company that is taking what these people have done and selling it.
So
as
what
a,
do you think
as a package?
What do you think
haul?
A packaged haul would be?
You know what I mean?
So you're saying like an Odroid? Okay,
a,
yeah, like a pfSense
a, well, a
or some sort of
device
firewall,
or a, like or a you know or any one of these. Like I hesitate to say this. This is kind of like, I mean, it's mm-hmm. okay.
So whether it's Plex or
entertainment
what's the
system.
Other one?
Like you can put together all sorts of fantastic fucking shit with a Raspberry Pi, and you can have like the most awesomest arcade system get up. Now it's not going to be perfectly legal, but like, why hasn't a company like Nintendo or Sega or ColecoVision or Intellivision,
like a,
or whatever,
a RetroPie console,
have put out one of these console systems that's essentially, this is like a Raspberry Pi or an Odroid inside. Instead, it's like some customized circuit board, and you can't get into it and all this stuff, and
so,
it never works,
yeah,
as
like
well as if it was just
SNES
a fucking Raspberry Pi.
Like that, yeah.
Right. So let me play devil's advocate on that. Sure.
So, yeah,
sure.
So what I'm saying is, there's like, you could do all these, hold on one second, hold on. You could do all these wonderful things with these devices, but I don't see a company doing that and selling it. You can do it. I'm not denying you can't do it. Hobbyists and tinkerers, but where's the company that's taking that and selling it
okay,
to
so, I
the general
consumer?
So I think
probably tremendous resistance in that area. And the reason is because basically, if let's talk IBM PCs, let's use that as a metaphor. Basically, the Raspberry Pi is the clone of the IBM PC. So they came out with the clone first, as opposed to the IBM PC. Now, if the whatever mini, what was that, Joel?
Super Nintendo Mini, Nintendo Mini.
Okay, so the Super Nintendo Mini, why wouldn't it have been a Raspberry Pi? Because if they released it as a Raspberry Pi, like if you crack open the box, it's a Pi.
Probably a lawsuit.
Right, right. Not only that there would be a lawsuit, but there would be, you know, if N represented the number of people bought the Mini, there'd be N times 100 people out there that just got downloaded the Flash or whatever off, you know,
yeah,
Pirate Bay.
You want a good example of why don't they do that, Dan? Take a look at the Fire Stick and how many of those are sold with Kodi on it for illegal streaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Kodi was the other app I was thinking of. Thank you.
Well, I don't want to get into the... So what I'm saying is, you can do that. And a company could put something together that it was basically a Raspberry Pi with whatever it is soldered onto it. That, uh-huh, sure, you could, uh-huh, break it apart. You could do that with what you have right now and do stuff with it. But what I'm saying is, and again, an entertainment system, you run that fine line, you know, the Kodi box, that kind of things, are running into those situations. But there's other things that could be, these systems could be used for. Is that, and probably that's the big reason,
right
there, is if you can burn it into a chip and not have to worry about it being, well, you don't have to worry about some of those issues. But then that comes back around to my question is, I am just like surprised that there's so many companies that seem to want to put out a single board computer like the Raspberry Pi, like the X Droid, like whatever, Banana Pi, Mango Pi, whatever they come out with. I'm just surprised that there's not. They're not trying to capture something more than a hobbyist.
Well,
you make a good point. Education market,
and I'm not trying to invalidate like your point. I think that's an excellent point. I think the whole thing is this isn't a socialist utopia. We're all looking for some sort of profit. We all want something from the fruits of our labors. A lot of us do things like podcasting for no money whatsoever, years at a time. So there, I think one, Dorr says this often, is that if somebody does something and you like what they do, there's got to be a way they profit from it. Otherwise, it's going to go away. Now, I don't know how Diet Pie profits from things. I really ought to ask the guy. But some people do fantastic things, and they're just good-natured people, and that's what they do. Other places like Nextcloud, and in fact, I think they were selling a Pi setup for Nextcloud. And the other place where they're selling a device with not that they're selling it with the Pi in it, is Prusa, their control board. You can just snap a Pi into it, and then you can run Octoprint or whatever. So there's kind of a half step in that direction as far as, you know, 3D printing goes, because the Octoprint kicks ass. But I think a lot of it is, you know what, if there's something out there you like, you really better hope they're making a profit at it, because otherwise they won't be around.
No, that's what I'm, but, and I don't want to I don't want to denigrate software, but a lot of those examples you gave were software. I think there's a big difference between software development and actual hardware, which these single board computers are, because now you have a physical object that needs to be
so
produced in a specific way. And it takes materials. But what I'm saying is, you got to, we can cross our fingers and hope the Diet Pi sticks around, but Diet Pi ain't going to stick around if there aren't any single board computers. But yet we see the market doesn't seem to be like a small, you have a lot of, doesn't seem to be like a small handful of players. It seems to be growing. But you're right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I see a lot, like, I'm trying to figure out a parallel in anywhere else where you have a niche market that you have a bunch of different companies that seem to be trying to throw into. Like the single board computer. Like, I can see if it was just like Odroid and maybe Raspberry Pi, but there's a bunch of other companies that are putting these out there too.
I'm like, do you think so? I mean,
for what?
You know, the whole
it's got to be more than a tinker in education,
basically.
But I mean, and this is that maybe my
Dan is
perception,
you know, we
is
have a unique
completely
moment
incorrect.
Here. Anybody mark the date?
Because I look at that and
it?
Say,
it's the 8th. Is it the 7th? What day is it? It's May 8th at 9:06 p.m. You're advocating for the capitalist model, and I'm talking more about the socialist model.
Well, but what I'm saying is,
Amazon's here.
Radio Shack is gone, right? Radio Shack's gone. Right, unfortunately. Radio Shack's gone, but the freaking single board computer market seems to have a bunch of people trying to jump in there.
I think it can be explained many different ways. I think you have an interesting point of view of it that I never really thought about. But, you know, the guy that was soldering together a Heathkit, I don't know that there's some sort of analog to a Heathkit anymore. And maybe the closest analog is some single board computer out there. And there are kits. I don't know if it was just...
Yeah, but how many different companies were selling a Heath kit?
Yeah. Well, you had Heath kit and...
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
How many different
companies years ago there was more
you have so many
there was more computers. Yeah, there's Heath kit. I don't know if Lafayette made kits, but then there was...
Lafayette made kits years ago, yeah.
Okay. And then there's a... what's the one that begins with the R? Ramsey, I think was... Ramsey Electronics, I think, was still around. Yeah. And then you also have Elecraft, which is still around.
MFJ, yeah, MFJ still sells kits, too.
True.
And maybe that's it. Maybe the fact that, hey, Heath kits, there was four or five different companies selling them back when they were popular. And maybe the market, you know, you look at this and the Raspberry Pi and single board computer is the Heath kit of today. And you'll have a bunch of, like, you know, small companies selling these things, and maybe that's it.
You know, some sort of rover type thing with some sensors and drop a Raspberry Pi in. So there are some things out there. But I...
Right, and so Greybeard says they're small and they might be hidden inside boxes, but if that was the case, I would expect, given that the you know, circles that we run in, that would be obvious to us. Like, you would know, oh, yeah, of course, they're very popular, because you look, here's this product with it in it, here's that product that has it, here's this product. Like, the first handful of them would be, like,
you know,
big news.
What would be a good product?
And then it would kind of trickle out a little bit.
You know how they're at a restaurant, you go for a reservation, and they have a touch screen? You could do a Raspberry Pi with that, where it, you know, whatever, I don't know how the pagers they give you work.
You can, but
that
seems like a perfect thing for a Raspberry Pi.
You know, touch screen or
but are they using
it? Booth at like a museum, you know, information kiosk, I guess, where it's like, learn more about this painting, you know, that kind of thing, and click here.
And maybe that's where they're going. Maybe they're, you know, they're.
I think that's a great question.
That's
also well thought out, and I'm running for office, and that's why I'm saying you're also attractive and very handsome looking.
well, thank you.
I think that's a great question. I'm curious. Hopefully, I'll remember
that if I'm really that interested.
Look something like that.
Yep. Just a little bit ago, I had posted in the IRC, there is a company by the name of Homeseer that's basically selling the Pi in a kit for home automation. You know, the Homeseer, hold on, I gotta move my mouse.
Yeah,
basically,
that is
yes. Home Troller,
a Raspberry Pi with Homeseer.
The Home Troller ZS2.
Bravo to them. There we go.
All
there
right.
It is.
Then they got two others.
There's the device.
One, the Home Troller SEL and the Home Troller S6 Pro. The SEL looks like a Nook, an Intel Nook.
They need some marketing help.
They do. But it's like, one day I was just browsing Amazon and ran into that, and I said, that looks like a Raspberry Pi. And I started Googling, it is a Raspberry Pi.
I'm wondering if they give you access to the SD card or not.
I think I saw another article where they actually released the software, too. Maybe the source code, too. So, I didn't know. So, I mean, but it's like...
You know, don't. You know what, Joel? I can't believe that a company that lets you have access to the SD card and has released the software to the device that they're selling you.
Yeah,
that's
right.
too good to be true. What's the catch? You plug it in and it blows up.
Now there is discussion that Microsoft really is making a Microsoft distribution of Linux. I don't know, but it's one of those strange
things.
Wait,
what does
that
have to do with the home
sear
and the single board computer?
It's one of those things where you wouldn't expect people to do that, but now I think maybe open source in some respects, depending what it is getting, not only can you buy a product based on it nowadays, but hey, they're going to release that product source code too. Doesn't always happen, but
so can I talk about my ESP32 cam?
I thought you were going to talk about Beowulf cluster.
yes. Oh, yeah. Let me wrap up single board stuff.
So we're going to talk about the book.
So
go ahead, no. Okay.
So the I posted links in the IRC earlier. I got this on AliExpress. They're $7.45 each if you get them from Ali. I got two of them because I figured, what the heck. You will need a way to program it. I've programmed other Arduino type devices, which are, is it ESP8266? Or I always get it messed up, the number, because I think 286. So Sonoff devices have the same Arduino inside, and I've programmed them from the pin header, the 40 pin header on the Raspberry Pi. But this is the ESP32 cam. So for $7.50, you get a Wi-Fi Bluetooth capable camera that'll do up to 1200 by 1600, but the frame rate is pretty bad. But 800 by 600 is pretty decent. But also on board, it's able to do facial recognition. So I haven't been able to get the facial recognition part to work. I don't know if I missed a library I was supposed to include. But I'm running it. I programmed it off a USB to whatever, programming board that I got for, a couple of bucks on Amazon also. But one of the cool things I thought, so one, I want to do facial recognition. So I got two of these. I'd like to do facial recognition with one as you approach the house. So I know, hey, it's a family member, they should be here, or hey, it's somebody else, you better, grab a picture and text it to me or something like that. And the other thing I want to do is license plate reading, put it on the fence post. So I see if something comes up my driveway, and if it's one of the family cars, I know it's okay. Or maybe it's a UPS truck or something like that, and I got a package, that kind of thing. So that's my ultimate goal for these devices. And even if I can't do detailed, image recognition or, facial recognition or license plate reading on it, I can pull the stream from it and pass it off to another device to do that. So that's kind of cool. And I'm out. So if you want to talk Pinebook.
I really can't say much about the Pinebook yet because I just it just showed up today, and I was busy working all day and other things, so I really only got to turn it on and to look at it initially and to touch a few things. But my first impression is I think the hardware seems nice.
Oh yeah. And the battery,
I like,
I don't
the
know
form factor,
the
I like the
that,
size,
that
I like
good,
the weight.
Really old day.
It's not that bad.
I didn't stress it, by the way.
And what I don't like about, I'm not too, like my initial impression of Android on this.
Not good.
It's not. Like, I'm like, the first problem I had was, if when you get to the lock screen, when you bring it up, you end up in the lock screen, it keeps telling you to swipe up. I'm like trying to swipe up with the mouse. I even went and touched the screen.
Download
Edge.
Download Edge and put a real Linux on it.
Why am I touching the screen? It's not a touch screen.
I can't remember which one I had on there. That's just what I put on there right now. Just so that there wasn't what I had on there already.
Yeah, but it blew me away because the first time I brought this up, turned it on, and it was at the, for some reason I saw it was at the lock screen, I had no problem getting into it. Then the second time it happened, I'm like, I don't remember what I did to get into it before, because I think whatever
and
I did,
that trackpad
I did
freaking
it.
Sucks
and as
too.
I'm, you know, I'm trying to swipe up with the mouse or the not the mouse, the trackpad. Yeah, and I'm like swiping with the trackpad, and it keeps telling me swipe. Swipe to unlock,
bar?
Swipe, and I'm like, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying, like, going in different directions on the trackpad. And I'm like, it's not working. That's it. It's a space bar. But I'm like, okay, that's not working. I tried the escape key, that didn't work. I tried enter key, that didn't work. I tried hitting the power button, that didn't work. Like, and then I bumped the space bar. I'm
so,
like, oh, really?
I paid, I guess, $100 for its 14-inch. For those of you who do not have X-ray vision into Dan's basement there. After paying $100 for a product that I consider really well built and absolutely worth $100, I don't have any regrets on it. In fact, I kind of think I should have paid more for it. And I was wondering, if you paid $100 for that, Dan, what would your, do you think you got your money's worth?
I can't give a fair assessment of that yet because I haven't really done anything with it. But from my initial impression, hardware wise, looks fantastic. I'd want to try a version of Linux on here, which
so
I suspect would go
and
great.
Now that I candy coated everything, or give the best parts about it, I think the two worst things about it are the speakers, because you can barely hear it. And
they're awful.
The trackpad is pretty numb.
It's poo. The trackpad is poo. That's all I'm gonna say about it.
So there's
if I bought one, I would get a wireless mouse and keep it with it.
Yeah, I've struggled through with it. I don't think it's awful, but it's definitely not up to today's standards, as you would expect. Now, the Pro, I think there's eval units going out on the Pinebook Pro. So I haven't gotten one yet. Maybe I gotta, put some feelers out, see if I can get something.
I'm really excited to see what the Pro will do. And I'm actually considering buying that one that we've been talking about for the past 2 weeks. What's the Rafra board, I think?
The Atomic
Pi? The one from Ameridroid?
Ameridroid, it's the N2.
Yes, that one.
Yeah, the N2's real good. I haven't been keeping up with it. I hate to say it. I a little bit more than smoke tested it. I think I said this last week. I'm very happy about the level of heat. You know, at idle, I haven't really, gone all out stressing it, so I don't know what it's like when it's doing heavy duty computational work, what the temperatures will be. But four USB 3.0 ports is awesome, and I used, three of them at one time so far.
See,
so
there's two things that are really kind of trying to get me to click buy on that. One, 4 gigs of RAM. Two, gigabit Ethernet. Those are the two things that really kind of have
so you can get the ROC 64 for
about the same thing. It's actually about the same price. I just looked.
No, not the ROC Pro, but the ROC 64.
Okay.
Comes in 1, 2, and 4 gigs of RAM.
Because what I could do with that is I can put my Open Media Vault on it, and hopefully things will be a little bit faster. It's not that I think I've got the Pi 3 on it now, and it's not bad. It's just not You know what I mean?
Yeah, open media fold. What I heard you doing that on the Pi 3 is like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've heard other people using it.
Like I've used a Samba Share and watched a movie on it. You know, somewhere in the house over the Wi-Fi, and it worked okay. And this is a high def one movie, believe it or not. It was a Blu-ray rip. So that worked. But
the ROCK 64, which is kind of Raspberry Pi format, which has a single USB 3.0 port, gigabit Ethernet, of course, HDMI, and it has an eMMC socket, but you can boot off an SD card. The 4 gig version of that is $44.95, and the power supply, so you probably have to pay like another $5 for a power supply, I think.
Yep. And the same thing, really same thing with the N2, because they both take barrel connectors, so. I probably would not get the Odroid N2, the case that they're selling on AmeriDroid. I might engineer my own or see if I can find a plan for one.
Yeah, the case is $4. I would just click buy. You know what? Do both.
Maybe. The only thing I don't like about it is where you pointed out where the SD card is, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're right. Yeah, that's... I have written the guys and let them know my quip about it. But, yeah, it's funny. I hate to say, when did I get home? I got home Friday and haven't unloaded my car yet. I just finished unloading my car today. But I was in Orlando for 2 weeks, so I packed, like, two duffel bags of tech gear, you know, different single board computers and stuff and soldering irons and jumper cables and crap like that. But yeah, I just pulled the N2 out of a box because I did want to put it in my no longer data center in a drawer, my data center in a cabinet. But I'm not sure what I'm going to do with the N2. I'm still, because I have a couple of devices here. I've got the ROCK Pro 64, I've got the N2, and I'm still kind of scratching my head trying to figure what I'm going to do with them.
Oh, actually, it has eMMC, so I'd want to get an eMMC device too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would probably be something I'd want to do, because that's fat. The eMMC is typically faster than the SD card.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and the ROCK 64 boots very fast. I got two ROCK 64s now. Because one of the things I was looking to do, hopefully I get my hands on some sort of ARM ESXi. Either that, or I'm just going to do some sort of Docker cluster and get really good at Docker. Because I like the whole virtualization end of things. And when I say virtualization in the most generic sense of the word, that I don't have to put something on a micro SD card to boot it. That if I could take an .img file or a .iso file and put it in a Docker container and run it on another device, more powerful device, that'd be fantastic.
Now, you know what would really make me click buy really quick on a device is if they had basically everything the N2 has, add SATA, then I would definitely click buy, right? You know, almost instantly.
So what is it about SATA that USB 3 doesn't do for you?
Just that, like for example, I can basically, like, if I had SATA, then probably what I would do is I would just buy, like, a small, like, regular PC case and just stick it in there. And then that way I have plenty of places to stick drives and stuff. You know, just...
You know, you just said something interesting.
Yeah.
But I, you know, because I keep... I got this thing, it's like an ammo can, but it's kind of a hybrid between an ammo can and a toolbox. And I got it from Harbor Freight for like $7 or $8. And I always thought it would be very cool if I had like my ARM device or single board computer device lab in an ammo case.
Yep.
Ammo can, something like that. But you're right, if you took a, you know, some computer case, You could put a whole freaking data center worth of stuff in there.
Yep.
Actually, I think it's Pine. Pine did a rack mount, and they have their website that they just released, their new website.
Oh, that's right.
Is running off like a 2U rack mount of all their single board computers.
That's right. You guys talked about that last week, didn't you? On the Mini PC show.
Yeah, and it's funny because we kind of missed it. We meant to talk about it a couple weeks back. So yeah, they're completely dog fooding.
And and that's cool. And the one thing, the rumor that it's just been going around, it goes around probably once or twice a year, is Apple is going to switch entirely to ARM away from Intel, mostly because they can get better power consumption on an ARM device. So, I can't imagine them running macOS off of the same chip that's in the, huh?
Why couldn't they? It's BSD. I mean,
I guess, you know, because they also said, I think someone else has said they're also adding mouse support to iOS anyway. So basically, wouldn't be necessarily squishing macOS entirely, but basically making iOS more desktop-like on devices like the iPad Pro and stuff like that. So, but I could see them making the macOS run on an ARM too. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me none, because they haven't really. I don't really think they have any love for Intel. Mostly because Intel just can't seem to have, you know, like, is Intel making octa-core devices that use as little power as, say, this N2 board? No, they just aren't.
So I forget where I heard the story. And this is a good story. Apparently, the guy was a salesman, like Intel salesman. He had a meeting with Steve Jobs, and he's like, what do I got to do to get you over to Intel? He's like, oh, I've been running macOS on Intel forever. The guy was like trying to offer, I have engineers, we can help you, we can make this work, blah. And he's like, oh yeah, I've been doing it for years. Okay, I found the article for Pine64 plans to move their website on a 24-node Rock Pro 64 cluster. I'll post in the IRC.
You gotta know I've been so talkative tonight, but I gotta get going, so.
Dude, is it 10 o'clock? You're half
an hour early. No, it's actually early, but I got a couple things I gotta finish up here, so.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, well, Alan.
Alan, we love you, and I do want to have your babies one day.
Okay.
You have a good night, man. Thank you for coming on.
Talk to y'all later. Good night.
Alan was going to say they're all going to come out looking like a baseball bat then.
Good night.
So, if you look at this, so Pine64 plans to move their website onto a 24-node Rock Pro 64 cluster. And so they're talking about it being, so 24 nodes, it would be 288 cores, which I don't think is an absolute 100% truth. They said it would be 48 node with 288 cores. I think they're hexa-cores. Yeah, okay, so they go further into the discussion. That it's Cortex A72 cores and Cortex A53. So it's not identical cores. You know, there's a low power and a high power core, basically, and 192 gigs of RAM. So that's interesting. I don't know much more.
Rich
about
is like, bring out product and take my money.
Well, I'm guessing they're running Docker or of some sort. That would be my best guess.
Yeah, Docker or Docker. Maybe they're doing a giant KVM deal. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're running basically kernel virtualization, and you know, I don't know. So I mean, there's so many different things that they could do with something, and that much power too. So, but it's like, but then I thought, you were talking about installing computers in cars, and it's like, it almost makes me wish that I can just take the screen that's in my car and like not have the standard sat nav that's in there and just do that, you know, do something. Well, that wouldn't necessarily nav, but like, basically what I would like to have happen is not going to happen. My GM is then basically make it such that I can actually run Android Auto in my car, but that's not going to happen. But especially since they updated the interface, they brought up mode for the nav.
Yeah, I've had Android Auto Envy for a while, but I'm not sure how much I would use it. And so here's
right.
I may have said this a couple of times, and I apologize if I'm repeating myself. One thing that I really want in my car, if I do an upgrade to my car, and this is the 2015 Genesis Coupe, I want air-conditioned seats. I have black bucket seats right now, and my wife's car has the air-conditioned seats.
Nut coolers are awesome.
And if in the Florida sun, if you're going to get in the car and drive 2 hours after it's baked 8 hours in the sun, your back is going to sweat the whole ride, or at least yep. mine does.
Especially if you have a leather seat.
Yeah, yeah. And so if I could, if I could grab air-conditioned seats out of a, because they don't make my car anymore, and they never made it with air-conditioned seats. So there's two ways to do it. One is hack the seats and, you know, put the ductwork and the fan in there. The other way is maybe the Velociter or the Kia. What is the hot Kia with all-wheel drive?
I couldn't tell you.
I can't think of
Sportage?
It right now. No, not Sportage. And it's funny, one of my office mates has it.
Because it just makes it, you know, you
Stinger,
talk about
the Kia Stinger.
Okay, yeah, that's right. But you talk about the ventilated seats. It just reminds me of, I had a 1980 Oldsmobile Cutlass, and it had the air conditioner vent right underneath the steering wheel. At
yes.
point. That is something that is gone on most cars. They just don't have it anymore. If I had that, I would not care about air-conditioned seats.
Well, you know, there's my back and, you know, under my thighs and all that, but still be sweaty for the most part. But air-conditioned seats, I don't have a backup camera. And, you know, I'll typically, when I'm home, I drive my wife's car, or we all get in my wife's car and drive around. And she has the sensors, and it does cross. Not only does she have the backup camera, but it has crossing detection.
Yep, cross
so before
traffic,
you
yeah.
even see a person walking or driving across the back end of your car, the car's already alerting you to that. Which
yep,
that's
great.
Fantastic.
Mine has it, and I love it, and I absolutely will always try to get that in a car. Which is
so
pretty easy. The cam is easy now, but the sensors
oh,
are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the cam. I put a head unit and a cam in my 2007 Envoy for my daughter, which I still may do another upgrade on. But the thing that I was thinking about hackery, and for Brad, who's been texting me during the show, he'll roll his eyes because we're talking on the show about 3D printing. I saw somebody do this, and I thought it was genius. I would remove my mirror, remove the internals on the mirror, because there's like the garage door remotes in the mirror built into it, and then add one of these mirrors that has the backup camera and Android Auto and all that bit. It does kind of the magic mirror thing, so you can touch it and you can get your maps and everything on the mirror along with a backup camera and those types of things. I would 3D print a housing so it didn't look like, you know, Joe Butcher did the work, and then hang that in the stock location. So I had a very stock looking mirror with Android Auto
and printed
backup camera.
And printed in ABS so that it doesn't melt, and so that you can use acetone to shine it.
Yeah, that good.
Well,
idea, right?
Is acetone that does that?
Yep.
Acetone, yeah, okay, yeah. Do an acetone vapor deal. Yeah. But that makes me think of getting the what's the polisher and polysmooth PLA. That's basically a whole setup where you basically It's a special kind of PLA, and then you, I think it uses isopropyl alcohol, I think. But you put it in there. Joel Telling, the 3D printing nerd, had a really good video on it. But it looks really well. It didn't appear to make like layer lines and stuff go away. But it did make it nice and shiny. It looked nice. So I mean, but
So when's somebody gonna bring up that Linux 5.1 was released?
That's good point. I was just gonna bring that up. But that.
So you only had to wait what, an hour into the show before we talked about Linux?
Well, then you got some really interesting stuff beyond that. It really, you know, let's just say this. 5.1, you know, is it exciting? It kind of is, but it's not like the 5.0 release was, so it's probably not something that's going to get as much play and as much attention in the media. But something that does is some of the stuff that I think Microsoft's Build Conference is this week, and they're bringing out a terminal app.
Some new terminal app coming out, right?
Yeah, it's a terminal app. It's designed to work with Windows subsystem for Linux 2. Okay. And Ubuntu has pledged their support with that. So it's probably more or less an honest-to-God terminal application for Windows.
So who has used the subsystem? And I'll tell you a problem I just had yesterday.
I have.
Okay. So We had server issues. I had to get logs off servers. Of course, it's a Linux, Oracle Linux, actually. And we have a cluster that does Oracle Linux virtualization. And all I got to say to you folks out there, never, ever do that. Definitely VMware is best of breed. Anything else, you know, you're really, really hurting yourself with. Because basically Oracle Linux, they're just making a profit on KVM, and they're not doing a good job with it. So anyhow, I'm using the subsystem, Linux subsystem in Windows, or whatever the proper name is. I SCP'd a file, you know, a log file or log batch off of one of the servers onto my Linux. Where is it? Does anybody know? Joel, I'm guessing you.
Where? The Linux home?
Be in but home, wait, yeah.
Yeah, ask your question again, Rich. Where does the home exist?
Right. In Linux world, we all know where our home directory is. Like, there's going to be /rich, and that's where my file would be. So great. When you have the Linux subsystem on Windows, where is /rich?
AppData.
Yeah, it is. That's right. Yes.
Yep. It's an app data.
Yeah, it's a little deeper than that, but yes.
Is it really? App data
home/rich?
So I now
have that mapped on my file explorer, so I can actually get there again.
The one thing you will notice is it's very easy for you to get files out of the WSL section. So get that file from the Windows subsystem for Linux home folder. So say you had GIMP fired up and you saved it to your Linux home directory on GIMP. If you wanted to get it from the Windows, you know, from the Windows side of things, you can, and that's very easy. But if you have an image, say you downloaded it in an image off of Google Photos via the Windows version of Chrome, and you copied it into your home directory, you will not see it. It has to do with permissions somewhere within Windows subsystem for Linux. So it's kind of odd, but at least that's where I found it. And I had to see if Self has released the talk from last year on YouTube yet. But when I was there last year in Charlotte, I did attend. There was a guy who had a really good session on Windows subsystem for Linux. So It's really odd. I can tell you that much, but it's nice too. I've used Cygwin before on Windows, and this is kind of like that, but better. You know, because it's not as hacked.
It doesn't take 20 gig to install.
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know how big that folder is.
That was Cygwin, at least like 20 gig to install and have it be usable.
No way. Ouch.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm going to look at my app data folder right now.
I would be super surprised if the Windows subsystem for Linux was huge, because I know it installed pretty quick. All right, Greybeard is arguing with you. He said maybe Cygwin took 20 meg, not 20 gig.
Maybe the base install of Cygwin was 20 meg, but once you started adding in all of the extensions to make it usable, it was freaking huge and took forever to install.
Well, it's better, and I'll say this, that this is better than Cygwin in that basically you have the full Ubuntu repos. So anything you can install out of the standard Ubuntu repositories, you can then install in Windows Subsystem for Linux. The only kind of weird thing that you have to do is if you want to run an X application, you do have to run an X server. So, and there's enough of those that are free.
Okay, a full Cygwin installation can range from 23 to 112 gigabytes, depending on how you define full.
Okay, because Greybeard's still saying he posted the link to cygwin.com/install.html.
Right.
And
you can install it at 100 megabytes, but that's a base installation with basically nothing usable.
Well, I'll tell you what's pissing me off. I want to do ifconfig. Why is that dropped? Why do I have to install, is it net-tools or something? Or network-tools? And I'm talking in the ARM world in Ubuntu, so. Because I use ifconfig all the time.
Yeah, it's in a really weird thing. It's in your home directory on Windows, app data, local, packages, canonical, well, if you do Ubuntu, canonical, group limited, dot Ubuntu on Windows, underscore 79RKP, blah, blah, blah. It's ridiculous on that, but...
Yeah, but, save the yeah. Plan.
Yeah, so, pin it to your quick access.
Yeah, yes. So, yeah, now when I install DietPi, is it DietPi or Armbian? I forget which. You got to do an apt install net-tools to have ifconfig. Yeah, I guess they do. That's kind of like... You know, using VI when you've used
Wait,
Nano
did they use
forever.
IP by default now, don't
Nano
they?
Nano or Pico. It's like, I can use VI, I just don't think in VI.
Right, now I hear what you're saying.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, IP config.
Yeah, I switched over to using IP a long time ago.
And then there's the weird Ethernet.
Yeah, because all the systems I was starting to switch over to, and I'm
devices
like, all right,
instead of F0,
I'll just get used to it. I can't say it anymore.
ENS0. I'm like, really? I'm like, come on. Just WLAN01, ETH0. Come on.
Keep it simple, stupid. But did they do that? No.
Well, Dan, I'm hoping next week. Oh, I got a question for you guys. I'm hoping next week to hear more about the PineBook Pro, and I hope to be able to tell you guys. Oh, I got like two more things to talk about.
Before he goes and cheats on us with Dor.
Yeah, I don't think I'm cheating on you guys with Dor. But I won't kiss and tell either. So, let me tell you a tale of a cable company.
Yes, get the late.
Nobody's gotten back to me. First off, if somebody's listening, what bill? I got a bill. So, yeah. Okay. So you're saying if I don't pay the bill, somebody will call me and talk to me?
You pay your cable bill? Mm-hmm. That's why they ain't getting back to you.
Okay. So if you guys haven't been following along at home with my cable extra.
Oh, yeah. They'll call you. They'll call you a lot.
Depending on where you live geographically and if there's competition in your area, you will not have a data limit cap. Now, I have because there's barely competition. There's AT&T, and I'm not sure. I know somebody a couple of blocks away from my house put fiber in, but I'm not sure who did that. But basically, if you don't have the ability to get another high-speed carrier, they're going to F you with a data cap. And so I have a 1 terabyte data cap. And it happens, I'm on a 5-week rotation. So at once every 5 weeks, or really 4 weeks, I guess, I'm in Orlando for 2 weeks. So while it's one of those 2 weeks I'm in Orlando, I get notice like, hey, you've used 90% of your data. I'm like, how does that happen? So typically I'll be 3 days in Orlando or 5 days in Orlando on a regular week. So for the most part, I'm not even home and I'm the data hog. So this is kind of ridiculous. And I'm like, that just can't be right. And so I started digging. Yes. Yes. Yeah. My wife and my daughter. And I think my daughter,
they're telling you when you're
cellular
out of
data off her phone
and
sometimes the Wi-Fi isn't good in her room that she tethers off her phone on her laptop. So I'm really shocked. So I tried talking to them and trying to talk to them. You might as well pick up a rock in your yard and start talking to it and expect to have an intelligent conversation. But what I did do is I complained to the FCC. Lord help all of us, complain to the FCC if you think you got a problem with you know, your provider, complain to the, you will get the best action you ever had in your life. You ought to save that, like spool that off and use it in the intro. From Comcast. You will get the best action you ever had in your entire life from Comcast.
Wait, you got action from the FCC
from
Comcast? Wait. Oh.
Okay, so I complained about two things.
So you complained to the FCC, the FCC said, hey, Comcast, and they were like, we're on it?
The amount of data that I'm using isn't jiving with the Asus router. The plugin is from, I can't remember the name now. Anyhow, third-party plugin that monitors your data usage, and it's very granular. So you can see what app, what device, what day. You know, it gives you a lot of insight. I can't think of the name. It'll come to me in a minute. Anyhow, the other thing is my bandwidth, the up and down. So I'm supposed to get 10 up and 150 down, and there's a plugin in Home Assistant, and I could see that I'm not getting the bandwidth that I'm paying for. So they, at least three times I spoke to Comcast, and Comcast puts you to their security group. Now, these guys, I don't mean to throw people under the bus, but damn it, I'm going to drive the bus right over them. They may be very helpful to people that don't listen to this podcast. They're absolutely, completely unhelpful to people that would be listening to this podcast. And they say, oh yeah, our stuff's correct. They're like, yeah, it isn't. I can tell you it's not. And I somebody called it Dick Wham. Do you know who I am? Like, that's the acronym. Not quite, but almost. I'm like, I'm a software-defined data center cloud architect. I've had certifications in networking for 30 years. What's your certification? And they're like, I'm a Comcast security representative. I'm like, great. Now let me tell you what you don't know. They tell me, oh, no, our thing's accurate. Then they called me back like 2 days later, said, yep, we checked, our thing's accurate. I'm like, you didn't do anything. Oh, no, we did. I'm like, what did you do? I can't tell you. I'm like, you know, when we do discovery in court, I'm going to find out. Because it doesn't work that way. So they kept telling me, oh, and we're certified. I'm like, yes, I read the story. You were certified by a third party on 4 households. You weren't certified on my household. I'm telling you got a problem with my house. Then I get a call, because these guys, I wasn't going anywhere fast with them. And so another team called me up about the bandwidth, you know, that my up and down speed. They ended up from like 2 telephone poles away. I have one pole on my property. There's, you know, I'm on a corner, so it's across one street, across the other street. They put a new wire in the ground, and they verified the speed. Now, here was the trick. They were wired to the box. Now, I own my own modem, and I own my own router. I don't have their modem, and for a couple of reasons. One, I don't want to be a hotspot for the neighborhood. Not like I really have a neighborhood that's going to be connecting to me, but I just don't want it. Also, I want to be able to granularly control the ports, what's open and what's not. And if I want to open a port, I don't want to have to do it on their UI. I want to do it on my UI. They're wired up to it, and they're telling me, oh, yeah, you're getting like 180 down. And I'm checking, and I'm not. Well, there were 3 of us in my office. We all have phones with Bluetooth on them. And I was checking on 2.4 gigahertz. And I was seeing like 80 or 90 down. I'm like, wait a second. I switched to 5 gigahertz. Sure enough, I saw the speed. I'm like, okay, we're good on that. Well, since then, I've been monitoring my network usage. And I missed fully the first 2 days of the month and part of the third day. But so far, every day, the Comcast numbers in my router metering software, their numbers are within 25 gigs of each other, which would account for the days I missed metering. So we are absolutely balls on accurate. What was it they said from my cousin Vinny? So I'm shocked at how accurate the numbers are between what I'm seeing on my router and Comcast. And it's nowhere near, they've been, their numbers from the prior months were 4 to 10 times what my actual usage was. So if you want to be the ultimate FU artist, make an FCC complaint, get them to put the new wire in, and then change your service to AT&T or somebody else. But you know, make sure they spend $2,000 on your butt. But they, my last month, I ended up being 250 gig over the terabyte, which would have been like 70 or 80 bucks worth of additional data. And they just credited me that amount. And the prior month, they, you know, wiped out my overage charge. So they haven't told me why yet. And I got a letter from the FCC yesterday, an email, saying that they claim they have resolved the issue and they'll be contacting me directly, blah, blah, blah. You know, Comcast will be sending me some summary. I don't know how detailed they're going to get. I don't expect them to. But obviously there was something wrong and it is now right. And it is, you know, I'm very happy. Not like I'm happy with 1 terabyte limit, but definitely based on our projected usage, we will be within the one, probably 600 gigs for the month is what I'm estimating. So we're going to be, you know, basically 60% of the 1 terabyte limit.
That's good.
I would be really interested to know.
So I know what somebody it is they did. That's like, an engineer for Comcast.
And he's cables like, you know, or whatever. Yeah, like, why would that have been wired?
But that wouldn't account for, you know, 4 to 10x disparity. And realistically, if I was dropping 90% of my packets, I wouldn't be able to stream, you know, YouTube at 240 by 160.
Right.
So obviously their metering was way the heck off. And we verified the MAC address of the modem. So that should have been correct. I was wondering if they're metering off a different modem or what it could have been, but so far no answer on that.
Yep. I don't know. I don't like any ISP to be honest nowadays. It's just none of them are good. Probably my biggest beef has nothing to do with the actual service themselves. It's their business practices beyond the service. You know, like I go to
Comcast
Sam's Club
is continuously
or to
rated
Walmart.
The worst business going.
Oh yes,
they're continuously rated at that. So
Spectrum's
it's
not much
things...
better.
Right. But boy, that's a whole nother gripe. I don't think for the amount you're pissing people off with the offshore call centers. And I'm not even talking about India. I don't even know where the call set. It's not India. Actually, I did get somebody from India once.
Come again.
They're all over. They're all, and they're reading a script. It's like, dude, put the script down. We're not dealing with a script here. But they're precisely engineering and planning to be the worst possible in customer service.
Yep. Well, not to mention the fact, you know, it's like it doesn't matter, you know, what day you go or where you go, but like I'll go to like Sam's or to Walmart, and you have Spectrum or energy providers or somebody. They're just, I'm like, dude, I'm here to get my freaking groceries done, not to have you sell your shit to me. You know, let me get my grocery shopping done. You know, and it just goes to where I think. Are companies still stuck in the 20th century, you know, and where they're doing all this hard sell stuff, like going door to door and hitting you up when you're walking through the grocery store? You know, I'm like, do you know that I can go and find the best internet deal very easily by just firing up a web browser at home? Why would I stand there and talk to you and waste my time? It's just ridiculous, and it's like, I'm like, you know, and then you want to do things like you want to throttle me, or you want to do this, or, you know, or luckily nobody's ever really asked, you know, do you work from home or anything like that, when I was on a phone call for support, which I'll say this, I never call them for support, so I mean, it's like, you know, why would I do that? Because I know it's just not the point. You're not going to happen. You know, they're not going to give me the help I need. They're just going to try and figure out a way to tell me I'm wrong. Anyway, though, I mean, they all suck. Every one of them does.
Oh, gosh, I was pushing shift on the wrong keyboard thinking I was talking. So, so far... If I heard precisely technically what the problem was with Comcast, I'd be very excited, but I'm still happy I'm not paying through the nose and have to change, you know, ISPs and go through whatever hassle. I've had another kind of provider hassle. Did I tell you guys a story about EasyPass and SunPass last week? So So I talked to SunPass this week again.
Yes, yeah.
And they said, you know, we're behind. We have the
how
ticket.
They don't work
we
together.
Understand. I said, you know, is this
or they,
get
they work a little
She's
too
like,
good
yeah,
together.
There was a communication issue. We'll make sure we talk to them, and you'll get a credit back, and it won't. I'm like, okay, all right. So they seem certain that they'll be able to resolve the issue, which makes me happy because, you know, New York Easy Pass, they were going to send the state police after me. So.
Ah, that sucks. Well, while you were talking about Comcast, I looked up how big my rootFS is on my Windows subsystem for Linux is 590 megabytes. Granted, I haven't installed a whole lot there yet. I don't even know if I installed any X apps yet, but I have actually tried running like the full desktop, and it does work. It's not easy to use, but it, you know, with what you know, you're fighting Windows a little bit. But honestly, that's not really why I screw around and run with a subsystem for Linux anyway.
Well, you know what? If you got an SSH or SCP stuff, it's so much easier in Linux. I just hate doing it from Windows. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're not allowed to use anything other than PuTTY because that was one of my ideas when I first got the company I'm at was, you know, the hell with PuTTY. I don't like PuTTY. Just let me install Cygwin and I'll SSH from there. And nope, not allowed to do it. Got to use PuTTY.
Whoa. That's tough. So I got a tech question. Has anybody used Proxmox? And I'm guessing that's a no. Okay, yeah, I was. It's funny. I pulled out one of the laptops I threw Ubuntu on and tried to install Proxmox onto it, and I did.
I've never used it.
I think it's a Centrino or whatever, and it doesn't have virtualization in the BIOS. And I'm like, really? So the VT whatever allows you to do virtualization wasn't a checkbox there, and I guess I can't do virtual. And then I tried on my old MacBook Pro, and it would install, but it's looking, it on boot, it squawks about a driver for Wi-Fi. I'm like, all right, I'm out. You know, I messed with this too long, which now means I've got two computers that I used to have Ubuntu on that no longer, and I guess it's a good excuse to install the latest version. Oh, the only other thing I meant to say, I'm looking at my ESPCam32 or ESP32 cam. I don't understand. It's got to be out there. I'm sure I just haven't found it yet. There's got to be like a ring, you know, some sort of, you know, not only a 3D, the STL file for a 3D enclosure for it, but also the app end of it. There's got to be some clone of the Ring doorbell system for it. Because I think that would be the perfect device. The ESP, basically a $7.50 Wi-Fi device with a camera would be a great hacker version of a
perfect device for what?
So I figured there'd have to be like a fisheye lens that you get from like an iPhone or some, you know, screw-on lens and an STL file in the software to make that all work.
And sorry if I was quiet a little bit ago when you were expecting answers, but I had none. But I had to switch. It was time to switch my filament over. So my print's going on like it's supposed to.
That's cool.
It is getting late too.
It is 22:06. It's 10 o'clock.
All right, guys. Good chatting with you.
Yeah, I gotta wrap this up.
I didn't say much today.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Joe.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
It's all right.
And hopefully finalizing my plans for Detroit here before too much longer. I had to change my vacation days off.
Hey, man, you have a good one.
What kind of gun are you bringing to Detroit?
I'm not in Detroit proper. We're in Sterling.
Alright, here we go. Here are your promos. Thank you, everybody.
Oh, bam! My God.
It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
The Jack Attack Podcast. Where chic,
oh dear,
meets geek.
Ones and zeros, ones and zeros, ones and zeros.
Powered by Linux.
Linux.
You by fun. Recorded in Windsor, Nova Scotia. With your hosts, John Watson. And Kelly Penguin Girl.
A girl?
A girl.
A girl?
It's the Jack Attack. That's the J-A-K attack.com. Time well wasted.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
Yeehaw!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room. Sushi.
Have those noodles for lunch, or actually...
Yeah!
You'll probably have them this weekend, I think, because if your daughter wants to try them.
I'm doing it!
What is that? Is it Lily that wants to try them?
You're right. That's a good point.
I'd actually love to see Lily.
Oh, you know what? I'll probably have Friday.
Yeah, that would be funny.
No, it's Avery.
It's the strangest thing in the world. It's like you made stuff that was just way too
that
spicy
would not
before,
be a good experience.
And then you're like, nope, I'm done. This is kind of like that, but then you get the actual real flavor, and you're like, that's actually not bad. Let me hit it again, and then you're like, before you know it, you've ate the whole bowl, and you're like, why did I do that? And then the next morning, but yeah, I want to have to try the other ones. They have ones that are only 1x hot. I might have to try those because I've heard those are pretty good too. And I could take it. Like I said, I could take it. I don't know if I'd want to eat it every day, but it's kind of funny. I had ramen for lunch today. I had one of the Ling Ling things.
I look forward to it.
That the Wolf Pit didn't like. I do like it. I get the Shoyu one. I haven't found, they have the like three or four of them. One of them is Shoyu, which has soy sauce.
Did you like
tonkatsu? And they have a miso one. I have not found the miso one anywhere. So that would probably be good. I think maybe this weekend. Stop the recording. Good night.
I gotta stop the recording, Joel. Say goodnight. Yeah.
And I guess
Joel, the puppy's outside.
I guess it's just I don't like flashing the firmware, but I really have nothing to be afraid of. Oh, I know what it is. Last time I flashed the firmware, I needed a PC. That's what it is.
And you didn't have one.
Well, my wife does. So I grabbed hers. And, but I was actually able to, with the, what is it, Arduino? Yeah, Arduino IDE on my Mac, I was able to flash the ESP32 cam. So I have that successfully working.
See, I've got a buy. Well, I think I've got a buy. There's the thing from TH3D that I need to buy so I can flash my firmware because.
I think there's a plugin in Octoprint, and you can flash the firmware from that.
Yeah, I still want to set up Octoprint.
Well,
dude, it's the crap. Just do it.
No, could do that. No, in my case, I could do that. But the genius is that Creality didn't put a bootloader into the Arduino that's on board. So before you do that, you have to actually open up the box, connect another Arduino to it, and then flash the bootloader. And then you can just flash the firmware with Abandon. But nowadays, no. Not until I do that. And I just haven't ordered the kit yet. Because I figure if I'm going to order the kit, it's not expensive. It's like $13. Gives you everything you need. Yeah. But if I'm going to do that, I'm going to order the ABL for it as well.
Will any USB camera work?
For
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you have to have a USB camera that works with a Raspberry Pi. Is basically the requirement. Not all webcams, just like the Wind modem thing, not all webcams work with a Raspberry Pi. Hey, buddy.
Well, I know not all webcams work well with the Raspberry Pi. I know that from first-hand experience.
I have a Logitech C720, which works well with the Raspberry Pi. Mm-hmm. So
there are good things about the C720s.
Yep. I think it's... I'm trying to remember if it's 720p or it's 1080. I think it's 1080.
Most of the time, I've hooked up webcams to the Raspberry Pi. They run for a while, but then they freeze.
Yeah, that's it right there.
You know, I'd have to check. Hold on, it's a couple inches away from me.
Because I used to try to run them with, like, what's that, Motion, I guess it was? I think it was?
Yeah.
And like I said, they would work for a while, but then all of a sudden, you'd go in there and it'd be just completely blank. Everything else would be running perfectly. It would just be frozen, and basically unplugging it and plugging it back in would be the only way to get it to come back.
Crap, I can't find where it says the model number. It says Logitech, but I don't know which model.
Actually, I might be wrong. I might have the C615. I don't know. I just haven't gotten around to hooking Octoprint up to the new printer yet.
So, Dan, do you have a Pinebook yet?
He should.
Uh-huh.
Are you keeping tabs on what I get, Joel? Are you keeping tabs?
He sent it to you.
No, I had the fucking tracking number.
Yeah, it arrived today.
Oh, good, good. You get to smoke test it yet?
Wait till the show starts.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, no problem.
Did you get to smoke test the noodles?
No, I didn't get... I'm excited to try them, and I'm thinking about probably tomorrow. But
are these the radioactive hot noodles?
Yeah, I might have to wait because my daughter came home and saw them, and she was like, "Oh, I want some!" So I
you have to buy some more first.
You have to record her reaction if you let her have some.
I will see about doing that.
I do want to see your reaction when you have them.
That too, man. I cheat. Well, I didn't cheat out. I ate them during the show, but I didn't video it myself. My experience was they have a really good flavor, but they're oh my god hot. So you eat them and you're like, oh, I can't take any more. And then you're like, wait a minute, let me take another bite. and that's how it goes.
Isn't that always the way that it is?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, wait a minute. It's like after the initial burn of the bite goes away, you're like, let me taste it again, because it tasted pretty good after the burnt went away. I want to try, they have just the 1X hot noodles. I want to try those. I've heard those are pretty good, too. just not as hot. I just wish I could find a place where I can buy them locally. I probably, there's a Cam International Food Market not too far away, and I could probably go over there, and they probably have them, but...
Alright, should we start the show?
Do it.
Yeah, who's got the noise? I hear not quite a 60 hertz noise going on.
I muted for a second there, and it wasn't me.
It might be me. I got my printer going.
No, it's going okay, when you're not.
No, I do hear the printer noise a little bit, but there's another noise as well. More, like an electrical interference.
I'm not hearing it on my side, so yeah.
Dan, you want to go through muting what you got?
That make a difference?
Nope.
I don't hear it here.
No, I thought I heard it right when we when it first came on. Did that make a difference?
Nope.
Now I hear it just barely.
Alan? I heard it when Joel unmuted, but I think that was his printer.
Did that make a difference?
I'm muting myself here.
No,
I'm still hearing it.
Alan, can you mute for a second?
Yeah, give me a second here. Find out how to mute on this damn thing.
Yep,
that's where it's coming from.
Fucking Alan.
Just when he's talking.
Is it only when I'm talking?
Yeah, just do push to talk then.
Yeah,
your mic's open all the time, and I hear it.
I don't really hear it. But
oh yeah,
it's like, I don't know. It's barely there, but you know.
Oh, you're not hearing in that frequency range then, because
that must be. You also have to say I'm very deaf.
Well, was it still on just now? Because I'd muted the microphone.
No, I mean, yeah. Only when you're transmitting is it on. You know, so if you do push to talk, it's okay.
Huh, okay. I'll have to configure that, so give me a few moments here, because I've got it set up for just regular whenever I talk type things.
Yeah, and well, Joel, the reason you can't hear it is because your 3D printer's going.
Probably true. and I'm waiting. Well, I was kind of hoping it would be done by now, but I've actually got the slicer set to beep in the... let me know, because I'm doing another a filament swap partway through it. So,
Joel, do you have Octoprint set up?
Nope.
Oh, because if you do Octoprint, you can do what's the browser plugin with the notifications?
I don't know, but it doesn't really make much difference, because basically it's just going to stop at that layer anyway.
Yeah, so push pull it. And the cool thing is, it would finish.
Do you still hear any noise now?
No.
Okay, I think I know what it was.
You,
really? Because I think it was my fan running in the room here.
In
which case, you're going to be stuck with it, because otherwise it's really freaking hot in this room. As long as when I'm not on, it's not, you don't hear it. I'm not talking.
It's quieter.
You see, Alan needs Pushbill to shut his fan off whenever he puts his mic on.
No, we're not going to do that.
The cool thing about Octoprint and Pushbill is it would send a picture. So you'd get, you know, a text on your phone with a picture of the final object.
Okay, because this is not... this is a purpose... excuse me, a purposeful filament swap, not because I'm running out. I'm doing a color change.
Yeah, you probably could set a push bullet for that also.
Yeah. Because I made myself a badge, Alan, and I did that. I swapped colors out right before the letters started, and it came out really nice.
I saw the picture of that, and it actually looks really nice. Let me turn off maybe my laptop.
Just need to get either one of those glue-on pins, or I'm actually thinking about getting the magnet so it doesn't poke holes through my clothes.
Oh yeah, that's always good. I got a badge like that.
All right.
Yeah, now I'm definitely hearing it out.
You can start whenever you're ready, Dan.
Yeah, because what I think what's happened is you're picking up the fan noise. I have to readjust. Now,
huh? Correct. No, we're just babbling about Alan and other stuff, so we might as well just go ahead and start.
All right, hold on 1 second. I'm still.
What? Wait.
Hold on. What the hell?
Hello? Anybody there?
You were here.
Yeah, you wait. I'm sorry. So I just. Oh, I'm double checking the stream and everything. Yeah, okay.
You double check that stream, baby.
Yeah, I was, because, you know, Frugal wants in. And I don't want to leave Frugal hanging out. You know what I'm saying?
What the fuck's Frugal?
Aren't you in the IRC?
Frugal
asked what the stream was up.
Oh, remember
the stream, the thing that I let lapse, you know, the virtual host I let lapse.
Joel doesn't have a third-party product for that?
Of course not.
No. I should get the stream back up again. I mean, it's there. It's just the main mirror went away.
I was going to say, is BinRev even around anymore?
Well, we had a couple of mirrors. I think BinRev... I think something's still going on with him. So we had a couple of streams, and it's largely because I let the main, where they were all slaving off of, and then also the other one that we operated, that I was paying $20 a month for a streaming mirror. Yeah, because we kind of never really took advantage of that. VPS. Anyway, let's get this show going
here. I cooked in my kitchen today.
Oh no, get out of here.
Really only only get some tater tots while I grilled some sausage on the grill.
Aye, aye, aye. All right.
Take her away.